the Samba Squad from deep in the heart of Canada. Yes, they're a Canadian world music fusion group that was formed in 1999 with percussionist Rick Shadrack Lazar as their leader. And this is from their 2006 album, Batuque. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And good Lord, a lot of rumor mongering going on here in South Florida. And oddly enough, it has to do with the president, the parallel president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. The news, and they continue to update it, even though they're repeating the same thing, is that New York is getting ready to indict him. And so arrangements are being made to extradite him from Florida, allegedly, from Florida to New York to face a whole bunch of charges. And that is one of the reasons why this is something that he typically does. When he's in trouble, deep trouble, Donald Trump does not hide. He goes the other way. He's out front. He is public. He's very energetic. He's very people-oriented. And he acts like, hey, I don't know about you, but I'm having a great time. So we'll see. And then we have a whole passel of lawsuits waiting in the wings, separate and apart from New York's legal interests. There are also a lot of other lawsuits waiting. So we'll see if this is all a put on by Trump to show that he's not worried. He's going about his life, and, you know, people still love and adore him. He's still the center of attention. He's now the comeback guy. He is going to win again, even though we had a news piece today from, I can't remember who, because I don't have it in front of me, saying that he doubts that Trump will be physically fit for another run at office because his health is so bad because of the bad food that he's been eating all these years. You don't know who to believe, but that's what's going on. In South Florida, a lot of attention is being paid to what might be or might not be happening in New York City with regard to preparations for the indictment of Donald Trump. Well, I wanted to pick up on some news that we didn't get to talk about last week. And the first thing I want to talk about is CNN. Now, we can appreciate the fact that CNN is one of the leaders of news in the world, no question about it. And recently it has done a great job of concentrating on the biggest story there is at this time, which is the coronavirus or the plague or the pandemic that now has hit India, and people are dying like crazy. That is clear. That is clear. What is not clear, and what we should be asking, is why are no Indian reporters reporting on a story in their own country, occurring in their own country? Everybody given a quote starring role as a reporter is white. And it should have occurred to somebody by now that this is a tremendous insult to the entire continent of India, that a major news organization seems to have no room for any voices at all, except white voices from the United States and even Britain. But not, I have not seen a substantive report from an Indian reporter, and I would say, make it a point to say, some of the best journalists in this world are from India. And that goes back many, many decades, who have paid in many cases with their lives for the work that they have done. But CNN can't find any. Now, why am I making a big fuss about this? Because we see that even when people profess that they are liberal or they are different, they really are the same as their fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers in terms of attitude. I watched this piece. It was a pretty long piece, in which the reporter is talking about all these different aspects of death and dying in India because of COVID-19. And of course, being a visual medium, all the poignant images are there. You see people crying, you see people literally tearing their hair out in grief. You see the misery. And the reporter is not Indian. Not only does CNN not realize that it is missing a lot by excluding, and I say the word excluding, I don't believe this to be incidental. This is deliberate. And why? Everybody in the news business knows that this is the big story of the year, if not the decade. Prizes are going to be awarded. People are going to be recognized and given medals and all this other kind of stuff for their reporting. And in the country that is being devastated, where there are reporters galore, who certainly should have been invited in to report on a major tragedy like this in their own country, CNN acts as if they don't exist. Or if they do exist, they don't have the talent to communicate this tragedy to the world. It is just repugnant. It is racist to the core. And it's an insult to all of us. To all of us. The whole point of journalism today should be that people are given space to tell their story themselves. Would you not agree that an Indian reporter knows India better than somebody from New Zealand or somebody from Australia or somebody from England, and has a direct connection with this story? And that CNN, well, it seems to have lost its common sense But CNN could have made a big point about this, that reporting by Indian reporters gives even that much more legitimacy and power to the story. How do you explain in India, for crying out loud, in the midst of a pandemic, they can't find one single Indian reporter who can talk to the issue directly and with great passion and with great authority? And I point this out because it's not going to be too long from now when they will announce all these prizes, Nobel prizes and prizes for journalism and whatnot, and look carefully to see if you see an Indian face. We should condemn this openly. This is just wrong. We've been through so many cycles of this, people of color all over the world. You have a major story occurring in a country, pick any country, and there are people there, trained, experienced people, and people who are of that land. They know the land like nobody else does. They know how to ferret out the facts like nobody else does. And you mean to tell me every story that I have seen recently having to do with the havoc being caused by COVID-19? That the person who tells the story is not from India. That doesn't mean that people who are not from India can't report. But here's a very, very special case. And they are qualified. And they are experienced. And they are yearning to tell their own story, and you say no. So the world will get to know about the devastation of India by COVID from white people. They're in charge. They're in charge. Now, you may say, well, Eutrice, you're kind of racist. No, it's not about racism. Who is entitled to tell the story more than an Indian reporter? Who? But they can't break away from those chains that bind them. They must be in charge. And in this case, being in charge is who gets to tell the stories. I tell you, I haven't been fit to live with in the last couple of days watching this nonsense. I'm so angry about it because Blacks and people of color generally have fought very hard for the right to tell their own truth and their own history and their own culture themselves. This is it's not a form of apartheid. It is apartheid. It is not a form of colonialism. It is colonialism. I could leave wherever I have been living and come to India and tell your story the way I want to. I have that privilege as a white person in this world. Even your own tragedies, you have no rights to claim the right to say what is happening to your own people in this day and age from a supposedly progressive news organization. You know, sometimes you say, well, maybe these things happen accidentally and people weren't thinking. But you paid to think differently. Your editors, your producers, you are trained professionals. And you present this face of India at this time, in its most incredibly painful moment, and it cannot tell its own story. Because you know and you have figured out that is a big prize. That is not going to go to an Indian person. So you will import your help. Who doesn't know India? And your help will even seek out the help of Indians to help them understand what it is they're looking at and where the story is. But they will get the recognition. They will get the prize. They will be the ones lauded as great journalists. And CNN, by proxy, will be celebrated as a fantastic institution doing such good work. I had to get this off my chest. I couldn't take it one second longer. And I think we need to ask CNN, you mean it didn't occur to you either? Watching your own news, and it doesn't occur to you the stark absence of Indian people telling their own story, reporting on their own tragedies. That is really disgusting, in my view. And it needs to be reacted to, because this is one of the very important information about anything that is important is controlled. I want to talk about, because I have all my notes here, so I'm going to ask for your reaction on this business with the colonial pipeline, which supplies 45% of the fuel used on the eastern seaboard in the United States, which recently was a target of a ransomware attack that shut down its operations and left many in a state of despair almost, because they saw visions of major gas shortages, and it was beginning to happen that way. However, despite the fact that the federal government, the FBI, stepped in and advised the owners of gas stations and fuel stations that receive their fuel through colonial pipeline, not to negotiate with this group calling itself Darkside. In fact, it appeared that they did, because they're up and running, not fully yet, but substantially they're up and running, and they're following their own mind. What do you think would have been the right thing to do? Was it the right thing to negotiate with a group extorting money from you? And by inference, prepared to do the same all across the country and perhaps even all over the world to bring an entire industry to its knees, to cause massive loss of revenue and major inconvenience to consumers? Was it the right thing to negotiate with the ransomware group? Let's start with that at 888-874-4888. I'd love to know what you think about that, especially in these times when people are coming up with very creative ways, even though they may be illegal and criminal, but to make big money real fast. It didn't even take a week. But they were able to bring this distribution system to its knees, to shut down its business operations. And by inference, getting people to understand that, getting people in the industry especially to understand, that's not the extent of their power. They can do even more and create more havoc and damage. I don't know what to make of this, but I'm interested in what you think. Was it the right thing for Colonial Pipeline to do, to say, we thank the FBI for their advice and counsel, but we've got to make a living. We cannot have our entire system go down. We're not going to make money. And that equals a total shutdown. But we don't like the idea of negotiating either, but we have to make a choice. What choice would you have made? Alan from California, you're on the air.
Well, I think there are two issues going on here. One, with all the profits, subsidies, tax breaks that the oil industry has gotten over the years, that they could not afford to get a proper and effective digital protective services to protect against this is very suspicious, for one thing. Number two, I think it's clear what they were hoping. Now they can say, look, we're under attack. We need subsidies. We need tax breaks. We need a Defense Department protections for our corporations in order to prevent this. It's a bit of a joke. I mean, This should have been done all along. Everybody says they should have been protecting against this all along. Instead, they figure, well, $5 billion, you know, that's nothing. That's pocket change to these guys. But at the same time, wait and see what they're going to be asking from the taxpayers, from the government, from the Pentagon, as far as protections against this kind of thing in the future. They don't want to pay for it, number one. And they're too cheap to do it, apparently. And they may have allowed this even to happen so that they could now say, oh, indeed, we need help.
But if you were in the position, if you were the president of Colonial Pipeline, what would your decision be or have been?
For the immediate situation, to get things going, you pay off thugs. You pay off thugs who are threatening you. That's one way of getting immediate results, but that's no solution to any ongoing problem that you admit it could be extended to the entire world, and that's where the problem lies now. Sure, right away you get things moving. But then where do you go from there? Oh, tax breaks, subsidies, get the Pentagon to help us. We don't want to pay for this. We just make money. We don't want to keep, we want to keep our money. We want you to help us protect ourselves. This is, I mean, this is so obvious with the malfeasance of this corporation that it's laughable. I mean, really laughable that with all the money they've been making, and I've heard various calculations of the billions they make for shipping oil from one end of a pipe to the other, they can't afford to hire computer experts, security experts to do this themselves.
I'm sure that they had some kind of help in that area, but probably not the kind, not the level at which they ought to have had.
Yes, and that's been said, and people have said this. People are shocked that they did this. They're saying also that they've been told for years that this, not just the oil, not just the Columbia pipeline, but other utility agencies have been told for years to start taking measures, and they refuse to do so. And It's only when you get this kind of situation comes along, everybody's in, and you know, what do? We pay them off. Do we actually invest in our protection? And they're going to ask the taxpayer to do this.
So you are the president of Colonial Pipeline. What do you personally do?
I lobby. I'm president. Oh, I'm a corporate president. I go to Washington,
yes,
and lobby my favorite whore in Congress and in the Senate to give us what we want in order to protect ourselves, which would mean the government, taxpayers, you and me paying for their protection. That's what I would do if I were a corporate head of that sort. That's my answer to your question. Well, what else have these guys been doing? They got it. They got us into wars in the Middle East to protect their pipeline of oil. They did that. Why can't they simply? Why can't they get us to pay for their protection here? I mean, that's an answer to your question. It may not be the one you're looking for.
Well, I'm not looking for any answer in particular.
I apologize.
I'm just interested in how you see it. And
well,
thank you so much for contributing today. Thank you for getting us started as well. Gordon from New York, what are your thoughts on this?
Hi, how are you? First of all, I want to tell you I love your show, and I think you're a great, great show, great host. If I were the president of this company, I would simultaneously reach out to the authorities like the FBI or whoever that would be and the 2600 Hacker Quarterly. So that's my first point. My second point is I'm Indian American. So my name is westernized that I'm using here, but I'm Indian American about your monologue. My only concern with the monologue is I think it went on for maybe 6 to 10 minutes, and it could have been better done and more courteous and less selfish if it were for 1 minute. So the presentation was way too long of a monologue. 1 minute of a monologue, I totally agree with the point. I disagree with the presentation of the point. And, you know, Mahatma Gandhi said means and ends are interchangeable, right? So your means of your way too long monologue is not really the most ethical standard, in my opinion. So there you are. Thank you. So that's what I want to say about
thank
that.
You. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Bruce from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, you, Therese, how are you?
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
What
yes.
are your thoughts
well,
on
I,
this Colonial Pipeline deal?
Well, okay, first of all, I found nothing wrong with your monologue. I happen to look forward to them, so I'd like to demur relative to the last comment made. Okay, as far as the substantive issue is concerned, I would have paid these people. I would have paid these people, all right? Because, I mean, this has to be seen as a cost of doing business. You know, we live in a country that use the same methods to interfere with somebody's nuclear, the Iranian nuclear system. You know, the Israelis, I mean, you know, and people are paying money all the time. I mean, you know, in Congo, for instance, I mean, America is involved there, and people are robbing the Congo. I mean, 6 million people dead over the last, 25 years. I mean, this is just a natural way of doing business. Yeah? I mean, and being as somebody who has been involved recently in setting up some cybersecurity, I'm not an expert in this field, but, you know, I was one of the people involved. And, you know, these things are expensive. You have to hire you know, some of the best people, they are expensive. And the best people are always the people who are breaking in, not the people who are trying to protect the fort, you know. So you have a bit of a conundrum. But basically, I would have paid these people off. I would have paid these people off without thinking, even if it means paying them off while I contact the security, the forces, the FBI, whatever, at the same time. But I would not have let the FBI, anybody tell me not to pay them. I would pay them because my responsibility is to my company first, not to play that, you know, that I am going to be a nice guy and go through, you know, an opaque law, legal system that is not going to serve my interests in the short term.
How will you react then to a criticism that some may have that by paying them, you are encouraging the burgeoning of this criminal activity and making it a lot better and a lot bigger and a lot more lethal?
Well, yes, I mean, you know, well, that's a criticism, you know, a valid criticism. But I don't think we live in such a moral system that we can pretend that we are holier than thou art. I mean, if it were even possible for me to pay off these blackmailers in such a way that I can use their energy to protect my thing, I would want to bring them in to show me how I can protect my thing better. I mean, so I would even be willing to pay them even more than they're asking for, if they can come in and tell me how I can protect myself from everybody like that. Right?
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm imagining there are people finishing up their notes right now to respond to you. But thank you, Bruce. Very, very happy to hear from you today. Thank you. Ed from Queens, what would you have done if you were in the position of Colonial Pipeline and you have gas available, you just can't get it out to the customer? It's right there at the pump.
Well, speaking from a business standpoint, I would pay them. This is similar to the case with the Somali pirates, the hustle they were running off of the coast of Somalia when they would take these huge cargo ships hostage and hold the companies that sponsored the ships for ransom, the cost of doing business, like someone else just said before me. You'd pay, you know, it's cheaper to pay than to actually lose the cargo or lose the product due to some type of sabotage with the oil pumping systems. The only thing that bothers me about this is how much of these oil and gas systems are running through the country and how much of them are controlled by computer systems that are accessible. And what could happen if one of these companies decides not to pay or someone makes a mistake and overloads the pipeline, the environmental damage that could happen, if it's natural gas, the actual physical damage that could happen, the threat of explosion. I think those things are more prevalent than actually monetary loss or gain, because the oil and gas companies make and lose money to hand over fist. They'd rather pollute and pay the penalty than actually pay the cost of cleaning up. In the case of Texaco and Chevron, with some things that have happened in Africa and Central America. So, I mean, I don't really have any type of sympathy towards the companies themselves. I just look at the clear and present danger of these computerized systems not being manned. And if someone does infiltrate them, you know, God forbid, there's a disaster.
But would you be concerned, or would it bother you at all, if somebody were to say your position is untenable because you're not in charge in any event, whether you pay them or you don't pay them, you're not in charge? If you pay them, you're giving them incentive to charge you even more.
Well, anytime you give it to blackmail, you're kowtowing to the oppressor to a complete extent. Like I said, the only issue, I mean, like I don't have any sympathy for the big oil. I don't have any sympathy for big gas. their track record of violations of humanity and violations of the planet are long. And on a cynical note, you know, get them while you can. I mean, I don't really care personally. But my concern is the fact that these pipelines, these gas lines, are run with computer programs that have obvious backdoors, that have the ability for someone remotely to alter the status of them, to alter the pressures in them, and the disaster that could be caused by our company doesn't agree to pay, and somebody does the nefarious thing and decides, okay, we'll show you what's going to happen if you don't pay. The lives and the environmental damage, the lives that could be lost and the environmental damage that could proceed this. I think there should be some type of regulation as far as with programming or some way the public can be made a part of the system to intervene for safety's sake. But as far as the company losing money, I don't really care.
Well, apart from the company losing money, the question is, they're in business. They're business people. Aren't they? They're not breaking the law as the law, you know, is designed. It's not a breach of the law. They're running a pipeline operation, and that's what they're doing. They didn't ask for people to come in and interrupt their business this way. So if you were to deal with it on a legal level or law enforcement level, what do you think, if anything, that there would be some kind of pressure, some kind of partial solution in discouraging many other marauders to come on board?
You have to upgrade your security systems. You'd have to, like the previous caller said, the federal government would have to get involved as far as with law enforcement, as far as with cyber crime, as far as beefing up the network and patrolling the cyber network, patrolling the internet network, however these pipelines, however these control centers are connected, to police them and to monitor them, and it would be at our expense. I mean, you know, when you do business, you know, this is a capitalist system. It's supposed to be a free market. So let somebody fill that niche. You let a security company come out and say, hey, we'll monitor your network for X amount of dollars, and we'll report any crimes. There's a niche. There's a business niche, a free market economy. Let somebody come up with pipeline security system.
But in your free market economy concept, the regular person pays the price.
Don't we always?
Well, don't we always? Right now, we generally consider it to be an affordable price. What if somebody comes up with the idea that we are now taking inordinate risks, and so we have to increase our demand? And so instead of charging you $10,000 a month, we're charging you $150,000 a month. Now, is it a crime?
Well, that's the game, whatever the market can bear. I mean, if security becomes a major issue and it's costing these companies money, the bottom line, unfortunately, in this quote-unquote free market system, capitalist society, the end user, which is the Joe Schmo, me, you, the general public, bears the brunt of the cost. That's how it works. I mean, until we change the system, that's the shortfall of it. If there's a cost that's going to be incurred, the end user is going to bear the brunt of it.
I'm not so sure I'm comfortable with your analysis today. I'm kind of very uncomfortable because I see myself as a consumer in this scenario, having to dig deeper and deeper and having no recourse whatsoever.
That's how the game is played. That's the invisible hand, my friend. Or the invisible foot.
How the game is played. Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for calling in and contributing today. Henry from Chicago, what do you say?
Good afternoon, Yatrice. How you doing?
Okay, Henry. Thank you.
All right. I speak somewhat as an expert on this because my degree, my master's and bachelor's degree is in computer science, and I have been in the field of cybersecurity for, you know, in and out every once in a while. But, you know, the thing about it, Yatrice, is the cyber attacks have been happening for the last 20 years. And when you look at stuff like this, this is all political. And the only reason why this poor oil pipeline has gotten, you know, hacked and they were forced, basically they were forced to pay it because they had no recourse on how to, you know, find the culprits and to get back their data. So they had no choice but to pay the $5 million. It's unfortunate, but unfortunately, with a lot of things that were going on in the last 4 years, in particular with the Trump administration and his, you know, his and him, the people in his administration who basically, because there's a department in the Homeland Security called the cyber intelligence security, where I guess he was directing them to do certain things outside of just, you know, building better infrastructures to prevent cyber attacks. And I think right before the election or after the election, he had fired the guy who was heading that department because he said that he didn't see election fraud in it. And, you know, it's been a big mess over the last couple of years. And I'm not even going to blame him for it because Obama also kind of ignored the threat of cyber attacks because, Yatrice, this is the new warfare right now. This is the new warfare. I honestly think if there is a next world war that's going to be coming, part of it is going to be cyber. It's going to be really bad where if a country has access to, you know, our power plant infrastructure systems, they can basically take us down and throw us back into the Stone Age. So, you know, unfortunately, this should be a lesson. Well, I mean, a couple of years ago, the credit card companies had got hacked. I think Equifax got hacked, and a lot of information got on the dark web to a lot of people. So, I mean, that was an alarm within itself. So, I'm interested to see how they're going to respond to this one because we've had some big data breaches over the years, and nothing was really done to kind of quell these attacks. So, unfortunately, you know, this happened, but I'm interested to see what the response is by the government and how they are going to strengthen their cybersecurity infrastructure in order to prevent stuff like this.
Me too. Thanks, Henry, for calling in and contributing today.
Thank you.
Gerald from Florida, you're on the air.
I wonder where they got the $4 million number from to that company that's bubblegum money. And they could, I'm sorry?
It was five.
Where they got that number from. That's bubblegum money to this company. And the other thing is that I'm thinking is that if it was so possible to do this, to extract $5 million from a company without getting caught. This operation that went on, and I don't know too much about computers, whatever they did would happen 10 times a day if they could get away with it. Apparently, the idea is that they're not going to be able to recover this $5 million. They'll never find out where it went. And I find that unbelievable, but the guy that just called, maybe he could answer that question the next time he calls. Well, how can they not find out, trace it electronically, because that's the way the money travels? That's what I don't understand. And apparently, not to digress or go off on a tangent, but I don't think much of Bernie Madoff's money was recovered, and that was $85 or $65 billion, not million, billion. So something's wrong, and I don't believe half the stuff that is put out by the in the press, and that's about it.
Okay, so tell us what we don't, what you don't believe. What do you believe?
Well, I don't. You get.
You respond.
There's so much.
What do you believe?
Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem. Somebody says it's raining, and then somebody says it's not raining. Well, it is either raining or not raining. But every bit of news, if you listen to Gary Noe, which I do, and other places, they say one thing about the virus, and then the government or some other group or doctors or whatever says something that's contrary. How am I supposed to know? That's not my field of expertise. I don't know. I'm not a biologist or I have anything to do with organic material. And how do I know? How can one know?
How do you feel being in, I'm in your situation as well. How do we know? How do I know? What does it make you feel like? Not sure that you know, and if you think you know, not sure that what you know is worth knowing.
Exactly. I don't know, you know, and I know that we've been lied to. If I just listen to the, again, I don't want to, I want to let somebody else get their 2 cents in, but I just listened to Gary Noe and about the FDA, and if some of what he says, maybe all of it, but it's got to be true. And it's incredible what's going on. And I just want to make one last comment, and thank you for listening to me. The idea that supporting extortion is totally ludicrous. They worked for years to get rid of the mob in New York and elsewhere, the Italian mafia I'm talking about.
Good point.
Anybody who suggests that they yield into it is off out of tune as far as I'm concerned. Unless your life is threatened, you know, I wouldn't go for the extortion or blackmail business. Okay? Thanks for listening to me.
Thank you very much for calling and contributing today as well.
You have a wonderful
Marcus,
day.
You bring us bringing up the rear here, Marcus from Wisconsin.
Thank you, Therese. A couple of things. I think your first caller is sort of on the right track about this. And the idea that Continental Pipeline was just this captain of industry quietly going about its business before it was devastatingly hacked by this mysterious group. A little research will show, for instance, the Charlotte Observer in North Carolina, going as far back as January, this company was being sued by North Carolina because they are responsible for one of the biggest underground gasoline leaks before all this happened, which they lied about. It turned out to be about 20 times larger than they originally said it was, about 2 million gallons. So they were under investigation anyway. If you were going to stage a hack or actually hack a company, they'd be perfect, wouldn't they? And now, as the first caller pointed out, now they have the golden opportunity to become part of Biden's brainless public partner public-private partnerships to get bailed out, have their infrastructure paid for. And, you know, if you actually look at the profits of one of these companies, these must be the dumbest hackers in the world to only ask for $5 million. They wouldn't even feel that. That's about the equivalent of me having to pay out a dime. Americans just have no sense of proportion. So I smell a rat. I smell several of them. In fact, it's the national smell.
People laughing, but it's the way you phrased it. So you smell a rat here.
I smell several. Yeah, I smell an entire nest. Yeah.
Okay. What does that nest of rats?
Look up in the Charlotte newspaper, the Charlotte Observer, for the history of what was going on with this rotten company before this whole sort of national event, which, by the way, they never, ever mention.
Oh, my goodness. So what is on... In your radar, what's on your radar right now with regard to this company? What should we be looking for?
Oh, well, the same thing all the big corporations in the country are getting wind of. They want, first of all, let's establish the fact that, you know, this free market nonsense is just that. Any functioning sector internationally of the American economy is completely dependent on huge infusions of public cash. So what you have to do is now get with Biden's current propaganda cover of infrastructure spending through public-private partnerships, which is just transferring public money into private hands so they can do whatever they want. And that's, you know, you do it with the banking sector, you pay for their stealing and gambling. And if they have infrastructure or a research and development, you get the idiot public to pay for that. And you yammer about how this is the miracle of the free market. So I think this is just part of opening the door for the other big oil companies to get their infrastructure costs paid for by a clueless public.
Well, this is the reason we talk to each other, because today, just in this conversation, we've learned quite a lot, and our brains have been adjusted a bit to say, well, don't accept everything that you've heard so far. There's some more thinking that you have to do. But I found it quite instructive to listen to the analyses that people are offering today.
Oh, absolutely.
And that makes sense. I mean, I didn't read it anywhere. But until it was vocalized here on this program, I said, well, maybe we came to conclusions about this a little too soon. So maybe we need to continue this discussion. I want to thank you all for being my instructor and for allowing me through your brain power to see things a bit differently. It's a great service that you have performed today and every day that you call in and offer your opinions. Again, it doesn't matter one bit whether people agree or disagree. It matters only that you lay your case out and leave it for people to ponder. Go over it, roll it around in your brain a bit, and see whether it changes your mind. Thank you all so very much. Let's meet up again tomorrow. Bye-bye.